Six. Six Music. From 2 a.m. Introducing with Tom Robinson. At midnight, Don Letts. Right now, it's Guy Garvey's finest hour.
Who put Garvey on the air?
The B, Barry BC. That's who.
Men reading fashion magazines. Oh, what a world it seems. We live in straight men. Oh, what a world we live in. Why am I always on a plane or a fast train? Oh, what a world my parents gave me.
Rufus Wainwright and Oh What a World. It's 5 to 4 in the morning here in my little house in North Manchester. Excuse me, I've just woken up, and the reason I'm up at this time, it's 5 to 4 a.m, is because we're getting on a plane from London Heathrow later today and flying to New York. So I've got a long drive to London, followed by a long flight across the Atlantic, followed by another drive and some settling in before we continue with the programme. But I won't put you through all that. Rufus doesn't sound like he's that fond of travelling anymore, if you listen to the words of that song. So due to the magic of radio, I can simply say Abra Kadabra. And I'm not only in New York, outside our little apartment in the East Village, but I've been here for a week and already had some adventures, some of which I've recorded for you. I'm here for the next 4 weeks, the next four finest hours are from New York, and I decided a good way to discover New York, rather than arranging a lot of interviews before I came out here, would be to walk down the street until I saw a friendly smiling face and then ask them if they'd agreed to be interviewed. So that's exactly what I did, and more of that later on in the programme. Since we landed here, our very good friend Alex Baker, who works with Elbow when we're out here, she's our publicist here, and a lovely girl. She's actually Danny Baker's niece, and she's an absolute sweetheart. So me and Emma went out with her at the weekend, and she introduced us to her friend Jimmy. We had some tickets for a jazz event at the Lincoln Center, which turned out to be very dry, very boring. It was kind of very smooth, smooth FM, not to diss another radio station, but it was all a little bit slick in a spectacular place overlooking New York. The window behind the band were incredible, but it was a bit dry, so we snuck out after 10 minutes and ended up having a bit of an adventure in New York. And Alex introduced me to her friend Jimmy, who's worked with David Bowie for a number of years now and is a very lovely, lovely man. I didn't ask him if I could interview Bowie because the great man, I'm sure, is very busy at the moment, and I didn't want to test a new friendship. But you never know. Over the next few weeks, wouldn't it be great to interview him? So here is David Bowie with a song that we were discussing at length with Jimmy and with Alex, and then more about my adventures in New York so far. So here's David Bowie and Ashes to Ashes. Welcome to New York, dear listeners.
I've never done good things.
David Bowie and Ashes to Ashes. And we'll have a tune from him in the second hour as well. David Bowie, our chosen artist this week, as this finest hour is coming from New York. Just to describe where I'm sat outside the apartment that Emma and I have rented for our stay here, I can see ornate fire escapes of all description. There's some very tall, it looks like bamboo trees to my right, and we're frequently visited by the most beautiful blue jays. It really is quite idyllic. We're having already, after 1 week, the holiday of our lives. But my duty to you as your host is to keep talking New York and help you discover it with me. This next song has been in my head since I landed here. It's by Moondog and it's called Bird's Lament. The bird in question being Charlie Parker, the famous jazz musician. But Moondog himself was a very interesting character. He chose to make his life on the streets of New York. He favoured Fifth Avenue, and he's known as the Viking of Fifth Avenue because of the way he dressed. He modelled himself, at least his dress sense, on the god Thor. And that meant a horned helmet and a cape and a long beard. While he was on the Fifth Avenue there. He was an inventor. He was blind. He was an inventor as well as a composer. He wrote this beautiful song coming up in a moment. And I'm going to find more about Moondog during my stay here in New York and bring you the facts, strictly the facts, as I find out more about him. So here is Bird's Lament by Moondog. You'll recognise the piece because it was sampled by Mr. Scruff some years later. It was his biggest hit, I think. But it's a beautiful piece of music, and in my head all the time while I'm wandering the streets looking for great radio. Ladies and gentlemen, Moondog with Bird's Lament. Lament.
Six music.
Sean W. Keighley. A man misunderstood.
Is it okay to dry your underpants in the microwave?
Maybe he's too intense.
A bit aggressive.
I know. I'm on a crash after my croissant. I'm taking it out on you.
Maybe it's his clothes.
My hood's too hairy.
Or his uncompromising charm.
With 10 being like the most I'd want to punch someone, you right now would be at a maybe like a 5.
That's not bad.
He has his own theories.
I blame bread.
But you can make a difference. Listen to Sean Keighley on Six Music and he will feel useful. Appreciated. The Sean Keighley Breakfast Show.
Is this cool?
Every weekday morning on BBC Radio 6 Music.
He's a space nut, you know.
Still on my balcony here in New York. You can hear the bamboo rustling and the birds are tweeting. And it's a really bright, sunny afternoon here. I went out onto the streets. I went and found Moondog's Fifth Avenue. I also wandered downtown to have my feet sorted out, which is a detail perhaps you don't need to know that much about. And then on the way back, I started searching the crowds as I walked through them for a friendly face. And I made my mind up, I looked into that, a New York siren right on cue. That'll be a fire truck. Yes, I started scanning the crowds for a friendly face, and I found one. And would you believe he was a Brit? Anyway, I'll play you that interview in just a second. He's a lovely man called Dan. You'll meet him in just a moment. I'm going to play this tune by Emma Tricker, which when I was getting the cab over from JFK to Manhattan Island, I was listening to this song because it's one of my favourites involving New York. The very wonderful Emma Tricker from the album Minor White. This is Lost in New York. Wandering the streets of New York City as I have been doing, waiting for that one friendly face to pop up, my first interviewee. I was on 2nd Avenue coming back from a pedicure, would you believe? Now, I don't want you to imagine me with painted red shiny nails here. I have dead men's feet that occasionally need drilling. I won't go into any more detail than that. And I was skipping back from my pedicure, and a friendly face indeed, a gentleman who was on the phone, sort of asked me if I was Guy Garvey, which I am. Very kindly, he's come to be my first interviewee on The Finest Hour in New York. We're sat now on the balcony of the little apartment where Emma and I are staying for the next few weeks. And I'm very pleased to introduce you to Dan Heisman. Thank you, Dan.
You're very welcome.
So, where were you going when we ran into each other?
I was going into the burger bar right by where we were standing for, not for a burger, but for a team meeting.
Okay, what kind of a team? What is it that you do, Dan?
I work in an innovation company, and we're called What If, and we help people invent things, or we help people to develop their own abilities to invent better things. And all the leaders of the business were having this monthly meeting, and we tend to find interesting restaurants and we borrow their rooms, and we were off in there having that meeting.
And as you can hear, Dan is a Brit, and he recognised me because he's been to see Elbow play a couple of times over the years. And you were telling me that your wife was pregnant on two separate occasions when you saw the band.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, we, as I mentioned when we ran into each other earlier, we fell in love to your music, and you were playing the very day we got back from our honeymoon. So as a thank you to all the people that had helped us with our wedding, we took them all to your gig. So that was the Atlanta gig, and yet my wife was pregnant with our son, Luca. And then about 18 months ago, you were here in New York, and we were very excited, got the tickets, and then by the time the gig came around, my wife was pregnant again. So both our kids, as babies in her belly, have been to your gigs.
I'm very, very proud. So, Dan, where are you originally from?
Brighton.
Brighton.
Yeah.
I was there a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, great place. Lovely. I'm very proud of Brighton.
Yeah?
Yeah, I am. I just think people enjoy themselves there. Mm-hmm. People always seem to smile when they talk about going there. So I feel lucky that I was born with the Brighton Sea in my, you know, in my, I don't know, in my blood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what brought you to New York in the first place? Was it work, or was it education, or was it love, or...?
It was work. It was this company I mentioned before, that there was a, you know, we were a London business. We'd been, you know, in London for about 10 years, doing pretty well. And we opened a New York office, and they said, do you want to go over and be a part of, you know, growing this exciting new office in New York? It was too good an opportunity to say no to.
Amazing. And you met, what's your missus called? Is she your wife?
Yeah, she's my wife. Yeah, Rana.
Rana.
Yeah.
Did you meet her out here?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I met her in New York about 6 or 7 months after landing here.
Oh, how lovely.
Yeah.
Well, the wind's getting up out here, so I think we should probably take it inside. But as we're talking about Brighton, as you mentioned that you're from, is there a song that reminds you of home? Is there something we can play for you now?
Yeah, I mean, anything by Blur reminds me of home. For Tomorrow would be great.
Coming up.
He's a 20th century boy. With his hands on the rails. Trying not to be sick again. And holding on for tomorrow. Love.
Well, that was Blur and For Tomorrow, and that was the first choice of our guest, Dan Heisman, who's here. I met him on 2nd Avenue, and he's very kindly come to my apartment and agreed to be interviewed. So, since you've been living in New York, since you moved from Brighton, Dan, has your opinion of the city changed from your, maybe, how you thought about it as a kid? It's such an iconic place. What's your relationship with the city like?
Well, it's a lot friendlier than anyone ever thinks of it. I mean, it's got this well-known bad boy past. And I think a lot of people might think that's the New York of today. You know, it was a rough place to be in the 70s and 80s. But it cleaned up its act. But to be honest, I didn't know any of this even when I came out here. I've discovered this. And what I landed and found when I got here was a place that frankly is kind of warmer and friendlier than even London. And I lived in London for 10 years before I came out here. Mm. I think it's more like accessible as a city. You kind of feel like you can push on doors. Social groups don't seem as like cliquey and well-defined. Mm-hmm. So it's easier to kind of make friends, move on, come back together again, go on adventures.
Yeah.
And that I just discovered by getting on the ground, walking around and doing those things, pushing on doors, and stuff just happens.
In terms of the sort of social diversity, the sort of racial and ethnic diversity of the city, I mean, John Lennon famously said that it was the modern Rome and that everybody on earth was represented in New York. That's something that I think definitely gives it its flavour everywhere. And also, it's very much a working city. I always think about the first time I was here, which is 10 years ago this month. It was my 28th birthday, the first time I was here. I remember seeing like a big white delivery truck that had been absolutely bombed with graffiti. It looked completely derelict. And I walked past it and I thought, oh, wow, nobody's towed that, nobody's moved that. And a few minutes later, I was walking back in the opposite direction and the back was open and it was full of bread. And it was a working truck. They just haven't washed the graffiti off. And that, I think, is sort of one of the real flavours about New York. It gets battered and it gets dirty, but everybody's moving and working, and it's got a real hive sort of thing to it. In terms of the iconic sort of side of it, so everybody, when I walk around, I feel like I've been on every street before because it's appeared in movies, because I've seen it in photographs and that kind of thing. Is there a particular part of New York, a little place in New York that's close to your heart in terms of something that people might recognise?
Yeah, it's Williamsburg, which is actually over in Brooklyn. I live in Tribeca now, which is a very nice neighbourhood to live in, and it's got this wonderful history to it. So all the buildings, like, you know, they're all warehousey and old, and the streets aren't necessarily on that grid system, so mm-hmm. It's got this organic feel to it. It's great. Over in Williamsburg, you've got this sort of probably the most up and coming neighborhood, and it's in Brooklyn, which is also very up and coming mm-hmm. as, you know, a borough. And it's where I first lived, and I lived there for 2 years, and I couldn't have been happier. I had my own little pad. Me and Rana were dating and we were falling in love, and there was always adventures happening in the street below us every weekend. And so, you know, we have a soft spot. I mean, it's become now, it's like a very popular hipster destination. Everyone seems to go to Williamsburg. Mm-hmm. House prices have gone through the roof. There's a lot of talk of it not being the same, it becoming gentrified. And you can see that now. There's an HSBC here and a Duane Reade there, which is like the American version of Boots. And okay. That didn't used to be there. Mm. But we still, every sort of 2 months, we still get our act together, get the subway across and hang out there, because it's just, it just makes us happy.
Yeah, of course. That's lovely. In terms of things happening, when people think about New York, they think about busy streets, you know. And I think that's where it maybe gets its rep for having quite a stern attitude. You do hear people having heated debate in the street, and it sounds like a full-blown argument would back home, you know. It sounds like almost fisticuffs would back home. For instance, you know, a guy came out of a shop doorway yesterday and another chap was walking and they got in each other's way. One of them was on the phone and didn't even notice that this guy had to stop. Now, the guy on the phone looked like he was having a lovely Sunday. The guy that he interrupted was very much a man at work. He was a delivery man. And then this exchange was really heated. It was like, I'm walking here. It was one of these sort of things. And I was almost certain it was going to end in violence. But then they just carried on. And they just moved off. And it's almost like the pace of the city keeps it sort of, it's more passionate, it's more fragile. At the same time as being warm and friendly on one side, I think people's tempers flare a lot quicker here as well, just because of the pace of things.
I've got to tell you something else, though. For any Brit that comes here, is you have to learn to speak New York really fast, because New Yorkers are impatient. And at first you think it's rudeness. And in the end, when you've been here long enough, I don't even think I've been here long enough to yet, but I've been here enough to realise that it's not impatience, it's inefficient. It's efficiency.
Okay.
It's efficiency, right? So I would stop people in the street when I didn't know where I was going. And I'd say, oh, hello, excuse me. And, all the sort of preamble to get to the question. I'd lost them by the time I'd even finished the preamble.
Okay.
Right? And so it took me 2 weeks of losing people in the preamble to recognize that you just have to say what you want.
Okay.
And so I was walking down the street and I had to build myself up to practice this. And this woman was walking towards me and I just went, where's the station? Right? And she went, and she didn't break a stride. She went, 2 blocks that way, turn left. And that was it. I was like, wow, I did it. I learned to speak New York. And then I went into a store a few days later and I was lost, right? And I said to this guy, I can't find the blah, blah place, right? And he went, I said, do you know where it is? And he just went, no. And he shrugged and he went, no. And I thought, don't you care? Don't you at least, can't you at least apologize for not knowing? And that's, I think, a lot of Brits, we'd be like, oh, I'm sorry, I don't know, but I'll ask my friend, or you could
refer you to someone else.
Yeah, but in New York, they're like, well, I don't know.
Mm.
I don't care. I don't have to pretend I care. It's better off for both of us if we just move on fast. And you have to be around that quite a bit before you develop a thick skin and you get that's just efficient communication.
Especially if, like you, Dan, you're a gentleman.
Oh, I suppose, yeah.
So, have you plans to stay here? Is this it? Is this your home now?
For the foreseeable future. I mean, I've got 2 kids, 3 and a 1-year-old. And you know, we love being in New York. We've been here, I've been here 6 years with a little 1-year break in Atlanta. Mm. As a family, we've been here, you know, 2 or 3 years now. And I don't see myself going anywhere for a while. I don't think it's forever. Both Rana and I have got, like, we've got wanderlust. We know that one day another place will call. Mm-hmm. We don't know what that place is. We don't know where it is. We don't have a plan. Mm. We just know this isn't forever, but it's really good for now.
Yeah. Dan's just taken a call from somebody who might be our next interviewee. Mate. So we'll take a break for a tune.
Is the dreamers of above.
That was Let the Day Begin. That's one of the new ones from BRMC, from their album Spectre at the Feast, which is an homage to the singer's parents. Good to hear from them boys again. Lovely, lovely lads they are as well. So, I'm glad to hear that record. I'm glad to hear that they're back together, and I hope to catch them soon. I'm in my apartment in New York. That sounds good, doesn't it? I'm going to say it again. I'm in my apartment in New York. Our first guest, Dan Heesman, has just hooked us up with our next interviewee, which is just amazing. Thank you so much, Dan.
Welcome.
Is there a piece of Manhattan that you'll always think of if you ever have to leave New York, or an element of it that you'll miss?
Yeah, more an element, which is the energy in the streets. It's New York plays out in the streets. There's the conversations and the fights and the disputes and the back and forth that you were talking about before. But also there's people tend to socialize outside in New York. I mean, obviously that shuts down for 3 months over winter. But when I came here, I discovered very quickly that people don't go to each other's houses. They don't go to each other's apartments. It's rare that I see the inside of someone's place. Okay. But meeting out for brunch, meeting out at a park, meeting out by the river, is very, very common. And there's an energy that people talk about famously about New York. It's really real. Mm-hmm. You feed off of it. And I don't think there's an energy like that in a city that I've ever been to. I've missed that the most.
Well, bearing all that in mind, all that in mind, Dan, you've chosen a tune for us that you're into at the moment, and something that you're digging on the streets as you're moving around. You're a man with a lot of energy. It was great to see your friendly face in the street, and thanks for kicking us off on a. I'm not sure what to call this item. The fact that I'm getting a sort of a chain gang thing going on. What? I'll come up with a name for it. Maybe you can help me out. That sounds like something that you might be good at, coming up with names for things. I'm in a band called Elbow, so I'm certainly not good at coming up for names for things. Absolutely not. Give us the track that you've chosen, please, Dan.
Yeah, it's called Home. It's by Edward Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros. And it's the RAC mix that I'm particularly into.
Well, just before we hear that tune, could you tell us now the identity of our next interviewee? What's his name?
His name is Errol Chakowski. He's half Turk, half American. He's slightly crazy. He is my wife's cousin. He's mates with the band Beirut. And he's one of the most charming blokes I've ever met.
Wonderful. Dan, thank you so much for your company. Thanks so much for agreeing to the interview. Lots of love to you and to Rauna and Luca and Aino. And thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been great. Thank you.
summer night never could be sweeter than with you.
Sharp and the Magnetic Zeros, and the RAC mix of the tune Home, as chosen by our first guest here in New York, the first of many, Dan Heisman. He connected me with his cousin-in-law, Errol Chakowski, himself a fascinating character, and we'll hear from Errol in the next hour of the show.
Hi, this is Natasha Khan. I think it's great to come on Six Music and do a radio show. It's a really different craft from what I'm used to, which is just going out and communicating through song and music and singing and dancing. Just to say it's Natasha Khan and not being under the guise of backflashes, it definitely excites me, but at the same time it's absolutely terrifying. I love to share music with people. I'm always making mixtapes for my sister or friends. So on the show, I'm just basically playing a whole bunch of my favourite records, songs that really influenced me when I first started out in music, songs from films, music that I love, that I take pleasure from, and then there's a few tracks by artists that I don't think have been played on Six Music because we couldn't find them in the system, and I have a very special guest mix from Tame Impala.
This is Natasha Khan.
Available now at the Six Music website.
Charlie Jupiter. It's Guy Garvey's finest hour.
Some emails now, though. I'm back inside my apartment because it's a little bit chilly out there. Yvette Normanly has been in touch and says, "Dear Mr. Garvey, I just thought I'd email you as you've been keeping me sane during my planning days as an NQT for some time now. You've also inspired some rather bizarre activity ideas for my reception class in a school in Newcastle. Talking cats with wild and helpful ideas to be one example. For this reason, I salute you." Thank you very much, Yvette. Another one now from Colorado, even, from Sally Kay. She says, "Sally from Colorado here. I heard you play Epocha by Gotham Project. What's funny and a great relief to hear this song In USA, it's been used for dishwasher detergent commercials for several years. From the first time it was played, I was a little worried that I liked the song so much, with it being from a detergent commercial, and I couldn't figure out who it was. Knowing you play it and like it, well, I'm not worried. I love the Finest Hour. You keep my ears open to a good variety of music and keep me musically inspired. Though half the time I listen to the show, I have to pause it and grab my guitar because it sparks a lot of random ideas that is nothing like the music I'm listening to. Glad to be of service, Sally. Thanks for getting in touch. Doris Kilpat got in touch just to tell us that they're in Salt Lake City in Utah, in the United States, where I am at the moment, of course. She listens to the show live every Sunday afternoon, local time there, 3:35. Thanks very much for that. We've also had, to my memory, our very first email from Peru. Leonor Salcedo Palacios says, I love your show on the radio. I want that song of White Rabbit because I had a rabbit and it reminds me of it. I'm from Lima, Peru. I love your show on the BBC. Thank you, Leonor. It would be my great pleasure. I'm assuming you mean this White Rabbit, the one by Jefferson Airplane. Song I wish I'd written. Jefferson Airplane and White Rabbit. Thanks very much to Leonor Salcedo Palacios from Lima in Peru. Another song for Guy recommendation here now from Sarah Razor. Her and her fella are long time recommenders to the Finest Hour. This is actually from last December. That's how long it takes me sometimes to fit your recommendations into the show, with them being so plentiful and excellent. Sarah says, meant to weigh in a few weeks ago, but life got busy, so it goes. One song of a masticatory nature, this is going back to when I was asking about songs involving food. One song of a masticatory nature you neglected to play is Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds' Cannibal Hymn. The takeaway lyric, pun intended, is, if you're going to dine with them cannibals, sooner or later, darling, you're going to get eaten. Indeed. Happy holidays. A belated happy holidays to you, Sarah, and to David. Here is the great man himself. Here's Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds with Cannibal's Hymn.
You have a heart, a I have a key. Lie back and let me unlock you. These heathens you hang with down by the sea, all they wanna do is defrock you. I know a river where we can dream. We'll swell up, burst its banks, babe, and rock you. You're gonna dine with them cannibals. Sooner or later, darling, you're gonna get eaten. But I'm glad you've come around here with your animals and your heart that is like a bird on a fence, sing you songs with a happy ending. Swoop down and tell you that it don't make much sense to attack the very thing you're defending. Didn't I just buy that dress for you? That pink paper pinafore that you keep mending. If you're gonna dine with them cannibals, well, sooner or later, darling, you're gonna get eaten. But I'm glad you come around here with your animal and your heart that is us. And I will never desert you here, unpetaled among the crocus. Allow me, my love, to allay your fear as I swim in and out of focus.
Put Garvey on the air.
The B, Barry BC, that's who.
Had to get the train from Potsdamer Platz. You never knew that I could do that. Just walking the day. Sitting in the jungle, lost in time near Cardiff. Just walking the dirt. Thousand people, Crosbers and Booker, fingers are crossed just in case, walking the dead.
David Bowie and Where Are We Now from The Next Day, his latest album. Wonderful stuff. So while I've been in New York, I've been receiving your emails, of course, as normal. This one is from John Morgan. It's a Song for Guy recommendation. And he says, hello, Richard Swift's Lady Luck sounded to me a lot like Homer Banks' A Lot of Love. I bought it in 1966 on a Liberty label 45 RPM single for 3 shillings and sixpence. I still have the record, but not the 45 turntable to play it. I'd love to hear it again. Many thanks for the programme. John Morgan, even. Thanks very much, John, for your recommendation. And I know exactly what you're saying. This sounds a lot like Richard Swift's Lady Luck. I don't know if Richard still lives here in New York, but he's an old mate I'd love to run into. Who knows? I might interview him later this month. But for now, here for John. I hope this is a good one to hear for you again, mate. This is Homer Banks and A Lot of Love.
I know the dancer can hold all the love that I feel in my heart for you. If I could spread it out across the sea, I know my love would cover you. Yes, it would. Ain't that a lot of love? Yeah, yeah. I want you home. If the cooks in the kitchen had a touch as hard as yours, they wouldn't need a fire. Honey, you are mine. Every day you got a smile.
Coma Banks and A Lot of Love. And here in New York, as I am, wondering how you're all getting on back at home, it's good sometimes if, say, for instance, my sister Boop sends me a postcard from home. Ah, it says, "Dear Guy, you know the old saying about March coming in like a lion and going out like a lamb? Well, forget lion and think polar bear. Cold air from the Baltic has descended on Manchester, rattling windows and whistling round the red brick and sandstone corners as hardy northerners bend into the wind like modern day Lowry figures. Out in the sticks, the temperature is even lower. As Frank would say, it's an overcoat colder in Bury. However, the mini ice age hasn't put a stop to much apart from Bury FC's match against Scunthorpe, which was cancelled due to a frozen pitch at Gig Lane. Nevertheless, our citizens have been keeping warm with the Wednesday tea dance at Stockport Town Hall, harmonica lessons at Band on the Wall, and healthy walks in Blackley Forest. One great side effect of the weather has been the crystal clear air and spectacular sunsets, which are best viewed through the barren winter trees. Their black silhouettes against lilac and salmon pink skies are just beautiful. And with visibility so clear, you can see the television mast on Winter Hill, all the way from Radcliffe. Doesn't that remind you of a song by Doves? More home news soon. Lots of love, Boop." Well, I know exactly which song you mean. Thanks for the postcard.
Thank you.
That was, of course, Doves with Winter Hill, sent by our boop, attached to a postcard from home.
I think the level's okay. Here we go. It's a day in the life.
This is Gideon Co.
I wake up at 7 o'clock sharp, and 2 hours later, I get out of bed. Then I eat porridge, and then I'll be listening to lots of records, as many as I possibly can. Then I might watch an episode of MASH.
Yes, sir.
This is followed by more listening to records. Then I say cheerio to the family. I take the evening train to Six Music. I sort through the records I've listened to and the concert and session tracks that we're going to play, and then I play them for 3 hours, with the listeners providing the good bits in between the records. Then I go home. Shipping forecast.
Westerly 4 or 5, occasionally 6 at first.
Bed.
Gideon Co. Monday to Thursday nights from 9.
On BBC Radio 6 Music.
Mantra Luna. Mantra Luna.
Now for the second guest. You remember in the first hour we spoke to Dan Heisman, who's a British guy who's been living in New York now for 6 years. He put us on to his cousin-in-law, Errol Tchaikovsky, who's a fascinating man, and I met him in a pub called Swift, which is here in the East Village. A little bit of a noisy interview, this, I'm afraid, due to the air conditioning unit, but here we go. Well, wonderful, isn't it, how it works? I love it when a plan comes together, as George Peppard used to say. So Dan Heisman in the street yesterday, the first friendly face I saw in New York, a wonderful man, and he's put us on to... Now, what would the relationship be called? He's married to your cousin.
Yeah, so I guess I'm his cousin-in-law, if that even exists.
Okay, so I'm delighted to be joined in this quite noisy back room of a pub. That noise you can hear is unavoidable indoors in New York. That's the air conditioning unit. Apologies for that. But I'm delighted to be joined by Errol Tchaikovsky. Thank you very much for coming.
Got it right. You got it right. Good pronunciation.
Yeah. Where's your name from? Where's Tchaikovsky from?
So my father is Polish. Mother is Turkish. So the last name is obviously Polish, and it means the quiet one. Mm-hmm. And Errol is Turkish, and it means be a man.
Really?
So yeah.
So be a quiet man.
Be a quiet man. I'm failing.
Do you know the movie with John Wayne?
No, I don't actually know.
Oh, it's a good one. Set in Ireland, The Quiet Man.
Okay, no, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it.
Well, you should check it out. So you're originally from?
From Connecticut, Storrs, Connecticut, which is northeastern Connecticut. It's where the University of Connecticut is, which is our claim to fame, UConn. Mm-hmm. We had some good basketball teams. So I grew up in a kind of college town, I guess you could say.
And how long have you been in New York, Errol?
I moved here when I was 18, so I'm 32 now. I did an 8-year stint abroad. I did my undergrad here, got fed up with New York, got fed up with a couple of different things that were going on in my life, and also I think on a global scale politically, what was happening here in the U.S., and decided I need to get out for a while. So I went to Brazil for what I thought was going to be a 3-month kind of stint, and it turned into 4 years. Mm-hmm. And I had a relationship down there, got married, and found street dogs and basically established a life there. And then that ended at one point, and I decided I need to get the hell out of here now. So I went to Argentina, and I did about 2 years there. And then after Argentina, I did 2 years in Mexico, and then finally came back.
What was it politically that that took you out of New York then, specifically?
Well, I mean, you know, George Bush, obviously, I think is the simplest and shortest answer to that. And it kind of got me interesting. This is, I guess, where the music plays in. I mean, I was kind of frustrated with what was happening here politically. And so I started, you know, I was listening to a lot of music at the time. And one Peruvian woman, Susana Baca is her name. She's signed to David Byrne's label, Walkabop, who I was a big fan of at the time and still am. So she had a song that I really liked a lot. It wasn't necessarily political, but somehow it got me turned on to South America as a continent. Musically, it started with music. And then I started saying, okay, I want to read a little bit more about, you know, alternative political models mm-hmm. in the rest of the world. So I started reading this Uruguayan writer called Eduardo Galeano, who is, he's a poet and a very, you know, I guess his writing is very political poetry, you could call it. Mm-hmm. So I got very into him. And then at the time in Brazil, they were in the midst of an election, and there was a very kind of leftist, you know, people's president whose name was Lula at the time. And I was just about to finish my undergrad. I didn't know what I was going to do, and I said, okay, if Lula wins, I'll go. So he won the first election, and they had the runoff election. He won. I bought my ticket a week later.
And amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. So once you're back in New York, I mean, while you were away from the place, were there things that you missed about the city?
There's a convenience here, and I don't know that it's just the city, but you know, in the States, and when you're not living as a stranger in someone else's country, so there's a convenience to life. Little things are a lot easier to do, and even big things are a lot easier to do. Whereas down there, I think life is a daily struggle, especially if you're an outsider. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a sense of belonging that I missed here. There were certain things that I did not miss at all, whether it's, you know, as banal as the options you have in New York, which for me are kind of really overwhelming. Like, you know, you go into a deli and you want a soda and you've got 36,000 options to choose from. And whereas in Brazil, things were a little more simplified in that sense. So I think, or not just Brazil, Argentina, Mexico. So there was, you know, certain things I missed, but other things I was really happy to get away from. Maybe the excess that we have here was one of them.
It's something that I've experienced as a Brit coming over to America for the first time. I was shocked at the amount of food waste, actually. I don't know if it's because there's a kind of war mentality still left over from the Second World War where all food was rationed in the UK, but you clear your plate in the UK, you know, you don't throw food away, and it's kind of disturbing the portions you get for a start, you know, because as a Brit, you assume you have to finish everything on your plate, and then you know, if you don't, it's just going to get thrown away. And so, I mean, what's marvellous about the infrastructure, for instance, of New York, like the sheer achievement of the city, how far it goes up into the air, how far it goes down to the ground, how organised it is, and the sense of community and the fact that every nation on earth is represented here. At the same time, I hear what you're saying. It's sort of the excesses of Western culture are also probably clearer here than they are in most places.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So your involvement in music, did you grow up listening to a lot of different kinds of music?
Thankfully, yeah. My mom was a big music buff, mainly Turkish music, of course. I mean, she was kind of experiencing the stranger in another land type thing. She moved over from Turkey when she was about, you know, 17. Mm-hmm. And essentially spent a larger part of her life in the U.S. than she ever did in Turkey. So I think there was always this need to kind of maintain those connections. So we listened to a lot of Turkish music around the house. All parties, every party that we ever had always ended in dancing. So I think music was a big part of it. Why I gravitated towards something that really was a kind of far cry from Turkish music is something I don't really understand yet, but...
Is there a piece of Turkish music we could listen to that that reminds you perhaps of back then, or is some way bridges
yes.
what you grew up with and,
yeah.
and what you do now?
Absolutely. I guess I don't know about it necessarily bridging what I do now, but there is an old song... I guess the origins of it are still in dispute. It's kind of like the kebab, like who invented it? You know, okay. was it the Greeks? Was it the Turks? You know, baklava? Who invented that? This track, I think a lot of places will claim it as their own, but it's a track called Shiki Shiki Baba, mm-hmm. Which the Kochani Orchestra does a version. There's an original Turkish version, which I prefer for obvious reasons because he actually does speak Turkish, and the other ones they're speaking, you know, other Balkan languages. But that's definitely one that I remember very clearly growing up that was pretty much on constant rotation.
Right, we'll hear that now.
Yarın fakir yaba. gözlerinin uğruna ben canımı adadım. Senden başka kimseye inan aşık olmadım.
Gel de söyle aşkını, sorma sakın yaşımı. Ne olursun sevgilim, darda koyma başımı.
Şiki şiki baba,
şiki şiki baba,
aynı aynı yaba,
aynı aynı yaba.
Melik duni,
melik melik duni,
yarı fakir yaba,
yarı fakir yaba.
So that was Shiki Shiki Baba.
Shiki Shiki Baba.
And which orchestra was it again?
Well, the Kochani Orchestra does the typical version, but the Turkish version that I'm going to send you, I don't remember the name of the artist offhand, because it's an old one, but I will get it for you.
That's the one we heard. See what happens there? Radio is a time machine. I am speaking to Errol Tchaikovsky, very kindly sharing some of his time with us on the recommendation of his cousin-in-law, Dan Heisman. Just to go back to New York a little bit, you sort of talked about before you went away to South America, the politics of the Bush administrations, plural, I suppose, and many things took you to South America. What brought you back specifically then, the end of that, but what else?
It was kind of kicking and screaming, I think, at the beginning. I think grown accustomed to being away for so long that coming back was more of an anomaly rather than a return to home. So it partially was motivated by professional reasons. My company was kind of like, okay, you know, I mean, for six of those 8 years that I was abroad, I was working for a company in San Francisco that was a digital distributor called IOTA. And my job there was I guess you could call it A&R, but it wasn't nearly that glamorous because, you know, in digital you work on a lot more bulk and it's not scouting an individual artist, but rather scouting a label that might have some potential on a global scale. So I would be looking for local labels in Brazil to sign up. So, you know, going through my collection and seeing what I like and then going and trying to get in touch with the label and helping them to make their music available to fans across the world. So I had been doing that for a while, and I think, you know, I did that in Brazil, like I said, then again in Argentina, and then again in Mexico. And at that point, they were like, why don't you come home for a little while and reconnect, and then we can discuss another move.
Okay.
So I came back, like I said, very begrudgingly, and was very upset but for a good 3 months about being back, and I didn't feel like I belonged here, and everything was pissing me off, and I was in a generally ornery about the move. But I think now I've adapted to it, I guess, as you do, and I'm actually happy to be here. I had an opportunity to go back and move back to Brazil, but I said, you know what, I think I'll stay here for a little while.
I love that there's a cinema to your story so far, Errol, without it being the usual cinema of, you know, happy homecoming. You could have very easily pretended that was the case. Mm-hmm. But now you work for a digital distribution company called The Orchard.
Yes.
Tell me what day-to-day life is for you here then.
Well, I guess, you know, we have an office which is across the street from where we are right now. I'm in the office most days. I try and get in by 9:30, but sometimes that's challenging, as you saw this morning. But it's usually, you know, going into the office, it's a lot of email and phone calls, a lot of listening to music, which I'm blessed to have as such a strong part of my day-to-day. Not just, you know, listening to music for professional reasons and personal reasons. You know, speaking with labels, trying to, you know, evangelize the digital market and where we see the industry going.
What's the conversation at the moment? Because it was, for a few years, it was download versus hard copy. Now it's streaming versus hard copy. What's the conversation at the moment? Who's pushing what direction for the future of music?
It's hard to say. I mean, you know, you're always going to have, anytime a new business model comes up that doesn't adhere to your traditional kind of ownership model, which iTunes did, And they were an ownership model. I mean, you would be purchasing tracks and you would own those tracks. Now streaming comes along, which creates a different kind of model and a different kind of hysteria amongst people, like, oh, this is it. And, I mean, I think that one of the places that we've seen a lot of growth is YouTube, as far as a music destination. It's no longer an audiovisual destination, it's an audio and a visual destination. And that's something that we've seen, you know, especially in countries where they don't have an established or as established a digital market as maybe the US or the UK, mm-hmm. Where you don't have, you know, iTunes isn't necessarily a part of the culture there the same way it is for us and for you guys in the UK.
Does it make sense then that the live arena is where the musician in the future is going to make their money? Actually people going out to see them?
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, today I think that's probably your only guarantee as an artist is if you get up on stage, you'll receive something. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying, you know, maybe you'll receive a drink ticket depending on where you are in your career, but I guess you don't have the same guarantee when you're creating a record. I mean, you can spend months or years or whatever developing a product that you don't necessarily have a guarantee will give you any sort of financial return. Certainly there are other returns involved, but I'm not really addressing those. But I think getting up on stage and playing, something's going to come of it.
And in one way, it makes me a little bit sad that bands coming behind my band, are going to have it a little tougher than we did in some respects. At the same time as that, the same technology that's allowing streaming and download and all the things that have affected how you can make money through traditional models, mm-hmm. is allowing people to make release quality records in the bedroom and release quality videos in the bedroom. So I like to think there's a balance, and I like to think there's always something for musicians and the business side of music to be hysterical about as well.
Absolutely.
You know, when it was tape, then it was CD, and it just shifts every few years.
Absolutely. I mean, I think today, you know, you've seen a democratization of, you know, content where it's no longer, you know, certain people that are able to create that content. Everyone can do it now. And they're able to reach a infinite number of fans in a way that you couldn't in the past without some sort of real infrastructure.
Just for being good.
Right.
Yeah. So there you go. Even though it's tougher to the days of Robert Plant's limousine are over, but at the same time as that, that was pretty excessive, let's face it, for people who haven't grown up for a living. So I think the message is, concentrate on getting good if you want a career in music, and the rest will follow. Errol, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us. Have you got another recommendation, a tune you're listening to at the moment, something you'd like to play out for us now?
This is kind of a weird one, actually. I was thinking about this when you asked me last night, and I wanted to pick a song that maybe had something to do with Connecticut, but Connecticut is not necessarily the most musical of states, mm-hmm. here in the U.S. But I was thinking about a song that, when I left Brazil, was really kind of driving me towards Argentina. Mm-hmm. It's by a band called Los Cocineros, and it's called Caminemos, which means we'll walk.
Let's hear that right now. Errol, just before you go, just before we hear that song, who are you recommending we speak to next?
I'm recommending a good friend of mine, Zach Condon. He is the, I guess he's the lead singer of Beirut, a band that I'm sure many people are familiar with in the UK.
Absolutely.
He's actually on his way here right now.
That's amazing. See what's happened there? The open arms of New York City. Through Dan and Errol, we now get to talk to somebody we've played on the show many, many times in the past. Zach from Beirut coming up. Well, this show or the next show, I haven't decided yet, just to tease you. And here's that song. We'll introduce it for us one more time, Errol.
Yeah, the song is called Caminemos, and it's by Los Cocineros.
You're a gentleman. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir.
Los Cocineros and Caminemos, as chosen by our second New York guest, Errol Chikowski. How exciting, eh, that we're going to get to talk to Zach Condon from Beirut. I'm going to play that interview out. I've already made it, if I'm going to be honest with you, but I'm going to play that out on next week's show. To the rest of our Sunday night business, though, William Scalia has been in touch from Los Angeles. He says, whenever this song comes on the radio in the mornings as I'm racing down the highway here in LA to my job, I consider missing the exit and keeping on going, making a left and heading north. Just saying. The song in question is Lord Huron, and this beautiful piece is called The Man Who Lives Forever, for William in LA. That was for William in LA, on the other coast of this mighty country I'm in. And that was Lord Huron and The Man Who Lives Forever. Another song for Guy recommendation now from Chris Cavanna. I wonder if it's the Chris Cavanna that I knew as a boy. Anyway, he says, Cashier number 9's Good Human, Please Guy, Because You Are One. Oh, that's the way it gets the song played on the radio. Well done, Chris. Here they are, Cashier number 9 with Good Human. Song for Guy recommendation from Chris Cavanna. That was Cashier number 9 and Good Human.
This is Brett Anderson from Suede on BBC Radio 6 Music.
Album of the day with Suede.
Tomorrow, it's Suede's new album, Blood Sports.
We treated it like we were a new band. I think that there's a danger of becoming too self-conscious. You're so kind of enshrouded by the sort of weight of your past. You've got to be a bit more instinctive and break free of that.
We'll be playing tracks from the album throughout the day. And join me, Steve LeMack, from 4, when I'll be joined by Brett Anderson.
Literally within half an hour of getting in the rehearsal room, we were making the same jokes from 1996.
Album of the day with Suede, tomorrow
on BBC Radio 6 Music.
Guy Garvey, the right side of the celestial equator.
So we've been all over the globe, haven't we? We've been east to west coast in the States, all the way back to Yorkshire, a postcard back from Bury in Lancashire, and we've even had somebody from Peru be in touch this week. And now to Italy, where Alexandra says, I've recently discovered your finest hour, and it's a pity I didn't find it before. I was wondering, do arias count in your section, A Song for Guy? In case, I would suggest Puccini's Illusivan Estelle from Tosca. I consider it a kind of great-grandmother of contemporary pop songs, of the good ones, of course. There's something pure in its melody that you can feel, although you can't understand any of its lyrics. Something primeval and universal, and pretending to be back at the end of the 19th century, I can clearly imagine you, Guy, wearing ancient dresses, riding in a chariot and creating a masterpiece like that. Frantic and heartfelt lyrics laid down on a basic and touching harmony. Do you think this aria can fit in your 19th century past life? Good night and good luck from Alex. P.S. Apologies for my English. I promise I will practice it. Ciao. Alex, your English is fantastic. Far better than mine, in fact. Here it is then. For Alex in Italy. I'm not clear, actually, if Alex is a guy or a girl. But even so, here is from Puccini's Tosca. I've lost my notes. Where am I? Illusivan Estelle.
King and Jerry Goffin were rule breakers. In 1950s Brooklyn, young couples were not supposed to have sex before marriage, and certainly not get pregnant. Young girls didn't try for a career in songwriting, especially when they were 17 and about to have a baby. And who ever heard of a husband and wife writing hit records together? Their saviour was good timing. This was the era when the Brill Building was full of publishers looking for the next big hit, willing to open their doors to anyone who wanted to be heard. King's undisputed musicianship and Goffin's mature lyrics were instantly recognised, and it was only a matter of time before they would hit it big. How interesting, then, that the song in question was Will You Love Me Tomorrow? A girl's plea to her boyfriend before giving herself to him completely. Written from their shared perspective, the lyric is knowing, but at the same time, through the Shirelles' sweet performance, it's a strangely plaintive and almost innocent song. It was an enormous success, and from there, husband and wife went on to write successive hits together. But in my mind, this is the best, because it came straight from the heart. And why am I telling you this? Because you need to know.
Shirelles, Will You Love Me Tomorrow, from the wonderful Beckopedia. Okay, so when I went to this pub, Swift, the one with the noisy air conditioning that you heard earlier on, where I interviewed Errol Jakowski, and where I'll be interviewing Zach Condon on next week's show, while I was there, I ran into a guy at the bar called Johnny, who recognised me. And I met him when I was here last year. We were sat having dinner in a restaurant here, underneath a hotel, we being the band. And Tom York came over and said hello. I'd met a friend of his at Glastonbury just before we met. And Johnny was with Radiohead. I went and had a chat with him. And what a lovely man he was. Nice to run into you, Johnny, if you're listening. Here are Radiohead from Hail to the Thief. This is Scatterbrain. That's all we have time for this week. Thank you so much to Peter and Michelle, to the Beckopedia, my sister Boop, for her postcard from home. Thanks for all your Song for Guy recommendation, and a special big thanks to our guests, Dan Heisman and Errol Chakowski, for their valuable time. Thank you so much for talking to us. Zach Condon from Beirut next week, an interview that I've already made for you that I'm going to play on the show next week. What a lovely man Zach is. I can't wait to introduce you to him. And also a wonderful Israeli filmmaker called Alma Harel will be on the show, hopefully, if I can grab her before next week. For now, from New York, this is Guy Garvey, the lead singer of Elbow, and it just remains for me to say to you... Happy New Week. Night, Mum.
From 2 a.m.
The introducing mixtape.
Right now,
it's Don Letts.
No matter what people say, these sounds leads the way. It's the order of the day from your boss DJ. Yes, people, Don Letts here once again for the next 120 minutes. And I'm going to cross time, space and genres in an attempt to keep you musically entertained. To that end, you'll be hearing from BT Hart, Tenorsaur, Steve Mason, Fimba Bravo, David Bowie, Sherlock Holmes Investigation, Kid Astray and Graham, all in the first hour. In the second, I'll be slowing it down. But right about now, from Squiddy Pilates, White Bread, Black Beer, this is Robin Hood.
I've been wanting to run a time. I dream of ending these dreams of mine, of hope, for love forevermore. A chance to adore and be adored. The need for someone new. All prophecy will fade.